Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. My guests today are among the longest practicing family medicine doctors in Clatsop County, Dr. Tom Duncan and Dr. Roy Little. Between the two of them, they have a combined 85 years of experience practicing medicine. Dr. Duncan, or Tom as he prefers to be called, is a graduate of the University of Oregon School of Medicine. He owns and operates the Lower Columbia Clinic in Astoria with his wife, Sue Skinner, a certified family nurse practitioner. Along with Dr. Little, who prefers to go by Roy, he has served as the Clatsop County Jail's doctor for 3 decades and as the county's public health officer for 28 years. Roy, a graduate of George Washington University Medical School in Washington, D.C., established his own private practice in Astoria nearly 30 years ago before branching out into emergency medicine. Since 2002, he has served as the primary medical examiner for the Lighthouse for Kids, the county's Child Abuse Assessment Center. He previously served as one of the county's medical examiners. Welcome to the studio, Tom and Roy.
Thanks, Joan.
Thank you, Joan. Nice to be here.
Well, it's great to be able to speak with both of you. I'm curious, did both of you always know that you wanted to be doctors? Tom, why don't we start with you?
My grandfather was a country doctor in western Minnesota on the border of South Dakota, a little teeny town. And I guess I always wanted to be a country doctor because that's where I wound up. I practiced for 13 years in Drain, which is a really tiny little town south of Eugene, before I came up here in 85. And yes, I guess I probably did. My family is pretty much either doctors or farmers or teachers, with an occasional preacher thrown in.
Did you ever go along with your grandfather on his, I imagine,
oh,
his
no,
house
I didn't,
calls?
I didn't know him until he was an old man.
Okay.
And he died shortly after I was old enough to even know he was there.
Rory, what about you?
Well, growing up, when I reached the sort of the college age, I either wanted to be a tugboat skipper or an economist. And then after getting out of the service the first time around, my wife and I lived in Northern California, and she had to have some medical attention for something and wasn't happy. And I thought, well, this is a really interesting job, and I can do better than this guy. And so that sort of sparked my focused interest.
So how old were you when you went to medical school then?
Ancient by those times, I was 34.
Wow. And I'm curious, what did the doctor do that you told yourself, we can do better, I can do better?
It was mainly just the communications and the rapport with the patient, transmitting, you know, talking about options. And I wasn't real comfortable with the skill set. I had the feeling he didn't really want to be doing what he was doing.
Wow. So what drew you into family medicine, each of you, Roy?
I've always been interested in things at large and in general medicine or family medicine. It's challenges to know a little bit about a lot of things and to know where what you don't know. So you get to dabble here and there, and kind of like a utility player, you can do lots of things.
Tom, what about you?
Pretty much the same thing. I was interested in almost everything, so it was hard to pick anything. And family medicine, since I wanted to be out in the country, and I wanted to make house calls and deliver babies and do surgery and, you know, do all the kinds of things that Dr. Kildare did. And there wasn't really any choice. That was the way to do it. I couldn't imagine being a cardiologist forever and ever. I mean, it was interesting, but to do the same thing over and over again for a lifetime didn't make any sense to me.
You would have gotten bored?
I probably would have gotten rich and then left the practice. But that wasn't my choice at that time.
So I'm assuming neither of you is motivated by making a lot of money then, or you would have gone into a specialty.
Well, I guess. I mean, some people are really interested in, they're very, very highly academic. One of my uncles was always disappointed in me for not having been an academic physician. He was chairman of the anatomy department at the University of Texas Medical School, and, you know, a very, very academic sort of guy, and just kind of expected me to follow in his footsteps, not his father's. And I didn't have that kind of a mind. I just sort of like to do everything. And besides, so much of specialty medicine is kind of patching up things, whereas in family medicine, you get to know people for their whole lifetime, and you can actually make some major changes in lifestyle or help them work out problems over an extended period of time. And that was always interesting to me.
That's quite true, because one of the few validated determinants of good health is a consistent long-term relationship with one competent practitioner of some sort, physician, nurse practitioner, whatever, generalist. Probably one of the major components of health improvement.
Do Americans get that nowadays? We spend a lot on medicine compared to other developed countries.
We know that's not true. You know, there maybe a third of the workforce is generalist, maybe not even that much anymore. Everybody else is a specialist in something.
So there aren't enough family medicine practitioners to go around then?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, in other countries, as you pointed out, that Americans spend more than twice the OECD average. Finland and Germany and Norway and all the European countries have roughly our level of economy, or even better, spend half or less than the United States. And yet the United States is like 45th in terms of infant and maternal mortality in the world.
And those numbers are rising.
And getting worse. And by practically any measurement of medical outcome, the United States is way down the list, but we spend a lot of money. So, and the other countries, by and large, rely on primary care models of some sort, with referrals to specialists as necessary.
So they have more primary care practitioners than specialists compared to us?
Well, that's the way I understand it, in most countries in the world.
Yeah, that's typical. And we are seeing all markers of health in the United States diminishing. For super specialty care, for some very specialized chronic disease management care, pharmaceutical development, you know, this is the place to come to. But if you're just working for a living, this is not the best place to go for medical care. Consistently across the board, and the markers of health are all deteriorating. When, you know, Tom's been doing this longer than I have, but we've seen resurgence of vaccine preventable diseases. We've seen resurgence of pregnancy related issues, mortality, infant mortality. I mean, it's race, class, income stratified. And we're seeing, when I started, an OB was a focus of mine, just like with Tom, and we had sort of this goal about what the C-section rate was going to be. Now it's double or triple that.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, you said that my wife and I own the practice, which is true. She is a nurse practitioner, family nurse practitioner.
And a midwife.
Also certified nurse midwife. So for about 20 years, we delivered a lot of babies.
I know that. I remember. Why'd you stop?
Well, actually, the final blow was that our liability carrier went out of business, went bankrupt. As you may or may not know, medical malpractice is a huge problem in this country. And over my tenure, there have been three major crises in medical malpractice, where the insurance companies would either leave the state or go out of business. So this particular time, it was just another episode of insurance companies couldn't make it anymore and left us high and dry. We had no medical malpractice insurance. We weren't facing any problem ourselves, but we didn't have any liability insurance. So at that time, because of the crisis, we couldn't get any liability insurance if we continued to do obstetrics. We could get liability insurance for anything else in family medicine, but not obstetrics. So we quit doing it. And actually, we were getting older by that time, and being up all night all the time was getting tiresome. So we decided to just hang up that part of it. But that was another really interesting part of it for me and for Sue, and for Roy. Roy and I were in practice together, as you've said several times, and he did a lot of babies too. And I think we both felt that being able to kind of cover the spectrum, so you see everybody, the whole family, and in these kind of crisis times, like having babies, it gave you a lot of insight into how the families worked.
Are family practitioners a dying breed?
Well,
that's an interesting question. There does seem to be a slight uptick in the interest in family medicine. There are more residency positions, and there seems to be a slight increase in the number of people who opt for those residencies. But sort of, I guess my experience with the contemporary graduates is they're less interested in full scope practice, setting obstetrics aside, because that's a difficult issue. But things that we would do in our offices, minor surgeries, minor fracture care, orthopedic care, skin issues. A lot of times, what I think I'm seeing is that folks are coming in and they're getting referred out for issues that we would have managed almost totally within the office. So it's probably a disservice to many people, but there does seem to be a slimming down of the concept of general practice. What do you think, Tom?
I totally agree. I think it's almost become something called wellness care now. Mm-hmm. The family medicine doctors, well, it's really hard to say. They've specialized in picking out the right referral source more than actually taking care of people.
That's a major skill, knowing who to send people to, but knowing when you need to send them is also the other half of that skill.
Well, and is that a function of potential lawsuits, insurance companies operating under the assumption that a specialist, say an orthopedist, is less likely to be sued for setting a broken bone than a general practitioner is?
There's certainly a fear of legal action. It is more time-consuming. It costs more to have the supplies. Maybe people haven't gotten the training or just the volume of experience to feel comfortable doing those sorts of things.
People don't really get the kind of training that Roy and I had. You just don't see the, in family medicine, you don't see the variety of things because there are so many specialists now. And all the specialists have nurse practitioners or PAs working for them, so that they're actually branching into primary care. I mean, what you see now is people come in for diabetes, and what they think they want is a referral to a specialist, which we provide, and the specialist kind of goes over the patient's history and evaluates the plan that we've started, and then they will often just take on the total care of that patient instead of returning them to the family doctor, because the specialist has a PA or a nurse practitioner who kind of takes over. So that's heart failure and diabetes and arthritis and just about anything you want to name. The chronic care components is often carried on by the specialist, and they just kind of get lost. We don't see them back. That's not always the case, but there's more and more of that. And certainly certain techniques, you know, I don't think that most of the younger doctors even do knee or wrist or any kind of injections for arthritis, for example, anymore. They don't deliver babies.
But you've done a lot of, both of you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what we were trained to do, you know, because it wasn't just possible. You couldn't do that in... There weren't specialists around to take care of that kind
of
thing. They assumed that we would do it. You know, they were there to do the major surgeries, and they just left the little stuff for us.
If you're just joining me, you are listening to a pre-recorded interview with Dr. Tom Duncan and Dr. Roy Little, who are speaking about their combined 85 years of experience practicing medicine, the majority of them in Clatsop County. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM. Another thing I've noticed, and I'm sure many others have also, as you just mentioned, Tom, is that a number of primary care practitioners are now physician's assistants or nurse practitioners. Do either of you, I'll ask you first, Roy, have any concerns about that, since obviously an MD has more training?
No, I don't have any concern about it. I don't get too bothered by the initials after people's names. When I started my medical career, I was in the military, and I worked with physician's assistants and nurse practitioners extensively. And they were people who had prior training in nursing or as paramedics or something, and went on into, say, to become a physician's assistant. And they had a wealth of experience before they took the time to become trained to that so-called advanced or mid-level, which I think is a bit of a misservice to these folks. So it's been good. Whether or not the newer graduates have that same experience is debatable. In the era where you can become a nurse practitioner through a lot of online work, what you're missing, you get the book work, but you're missing the hours and hours and hours of seeing people in various settings under supervision and learning the difference between normal and what's not normal. And in time will tell. But I did have a comment about primary care. My personal definition of primary care or a family physician was when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're scared and uncertain about what's going on, who are you going to call, right? Well, you're not going to call Ghostbusters and you're not going to call your cardiologist, but you're probably going to call that person you went to last year for your general physical. And to me, that's the best functional definition of primary care. Not a lot of people like to get calls at 2 a.m.
How many times have you been woken up in the middle of the night? Any idea?
How many times?
Yeah.
How many days are there between?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Actually, you know, there are so many differences between what we did and what we do now. Uh-huh. When I was beginning and say for the first 25 years of medical practice, I ran a hospital practice along with an office practice. And so I would follow my patients into the hospital, not just babies, but old people, and I would do a lot of surgical assisting.
Was that at Columbia Memorial?
In Cottage Grove, Eugene, at Sacred Heart in Columbia Memorial.
And you have your own independently owned practice now.
I do, yes, but it's strictly an office practice because virtually every hospital in the country now has something called hospitalists, where the doctors are not actually in independent practice. They are hired by the hospital, and they function only in the hospital. So people will go from their homes to the emergency room, to the hospital, or the way things have set up in almost every place, the hospital or the office-based physicians can't even admit patients to the hospital anymore. They have to send them to the emergency room to get cleared to go to the hospital. And so physicians have lost this sort of continuity between home and hospital, back to home. And they've also, in my opinion anyway, lost an awful lot of collegiality and ability to speak to each other through this transition, because I don't make any hospital rounds anymore. I don't talk to any of the doctors. The hospitalists are on shifts, and so you don't really have any, there's just really not a lot of continuity.
And much different environment.
It's just a different environment. So a lot of communication that occurred between physicians no longer exists. And that's kind of one of the things that's driving, I think, the decline in health statistics, mm-hmm. is that the whole communication apparatus of modern medicine is declining and degraded.
So even with the online charting and...
That makes it worse.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The electronic medical record is a complete disaster.
Yeah. I don't do electronic records. I've been very fortunate. I left regular full-time practice around the time of the transition. My personal experience was that the work I did at the hospital and charted, I increased my workload by 30%, and I would be spending the next half morning, half day, doing the charting that I would normally have finished within an hour or so of my time.
Before we run out of time, we've got a little bit of time left, but I imagine people out there listening are wondering, if you could change our medical system in the U.S., what would you do?
Well, you'd get rid of about half the specialists and make sure that the primary care doctors were well-trained and that they had access directly to the specialist, not through the answering machine of the specialist hospital that sent you to a push 2 for this and 6 for that. You know, so you have really good medical communication like in the old days. And then I would get rid of the electronic medical record so that you could actually have an English note that made sense, and you knew exactly what happened to the person in the office or the hospital setting. Those are two things I would do. And the thing is, you also need to get rid of things called pharmacy benefit managers.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of those.
You haven't, of course. Yeah. It's a parasitic organization that is between the pharmacy and the pharmaceutical manufacturers. Let's not go there. There isn't enough time.
Oh, sure. Rory, what about you?
Well, I would start with a process where everyone had basic access, some predetermined level of access to medical care, and that access went with the individual, not with their employer, not with the state that they happened to be in at the time, that we would standardize things like medical insurance forms, claims forms, data collection forms. There's estimate, you know, we have 20-30% overhead in just administrative costs because of the conflicting papers that have to be filled out. I would make primary care the backbone of the medical system. And I would keep an electronic record, but I would make sure it was actually a record that was served the purpose of communicating the note from physician to physician rather than serving as a source of payment or a source of data collection. So I would simplify it a lot, like some of the European systems.
So it sounds like you're talking about at least some level of universal health care?
There's a lot of ways to get to so-called universal health care, and it doesn't have to be Medicare for all. It doesn't have to be a quasi-socialist system or a pure socialist system. There's many ways to get there, but I would have the individual own it not be tied to employment. Employment-based insurance, or insurance that's only available if you have a certain level of income or below, is a major barrier to free flow of labor. As we were, for the individual to go where they want to go, do what they want to do, get the training they want to do, have the job that they're best qualified for. Right now, we have many barriers to that sort of success.
How would you make it affordable for somebody, say, earning $25,000, $30,000 a year or less?
Well, one of the ways would be to decrease the cost of becoming a physician, to take some of the, to cut down some of the outsized incomes that are available to people in medicine.
Most of the CEOs.
Right.
I don't want to interrupt, but maybe I will. Because when I was started, it was 1975 out in Drain, Oregon. We charged $13 for an office call and $11 if they came back for another visit for the same problem. And it cost $175 to deliver a baby. And that included well baby care after the baby was born and all their shots. In our office, anyway. And it's gone up. How many times is it now? I mean, it's astronomical increase in cost. But I don't make any more money now. Actually, I make less now, I mean, in terms of buying power than I made back then. There's been this enormous explosion of basically parasitic organizations in the middle that have raised the cost of medical care in this country. And that means when these giant hospital chains, like we have five of them in Portland, they claim to be worried about quality of care. What they're really worried about is market share. And they're spending a lot of money advertising and promoting themselves rather than actually spending money on patient care.
Right.
Well, unfortunately...
All of these things. I mean, this could go on forever.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guests, Dr. Tom Duncan and Dr. Roy Little, who have been speaking about their combined 85 years of experience practicing medicine, most of them in Clatsop County. Thank you, Tom and Roy.
Well, thanks, Joan. It's been fun.
Thanks, Joan. This was a good warm-up. We should carry this on.
Thank you for being such great doctors for our community also. Dr. Duncan owns and operates the Lower Columbia Health Clinic, a family medicine practice with his wife, Sue Skinner, a certified family nurse practitioner. He also has served as the county's jail doctor and public health officer for some three decades. Dr. Little previously had a family practice in Astoria before branching out into emergency medicine. Since 2002, he has been the primary medical examiner for the Lighthouse for Kids, the county's child abuse assessment center. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. The show is brought to you in part by a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Brian Bovenizer. The show can be heard on the stations of Coast Community Radio, 91.9 Astoria and 89.5 Tillamook. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you would like to send me an email, do so to perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.